and Steich versus Hamlet. Now, this case is also quite procedurally confused.
So yes, Your Honor.
Counsel. You're counsel in one of the cases, not the other. The other one's uncounseled.
Yes.
But any light you could throw on what we should be doing procedurally with the two of them would be helpful.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. Stephen Lubliner on behalf of Ivan von Steich. First of all, I'd like to apologize to the Court for being late today. Clearly, I need to refine my estimates of what constitutes an early departure from Petaluma. In my case, what the Court should do is reverse the order holding the claim unexhausted and remand the case to the district court. The district court can then reconsider the case on the merits or any kind of res judicata or mootness defense.
What purpose is there, given the existence of the second case? What reason would there be to do that? Given the existence of the second case, which essentially gives you what you want in the first case, which is recharacterizing the case as a re-loop case, why do we need the first case?
Well, I think Mr. von Steich, who's counsel for himself in the second case and is the plaintiff in this case and the petitioner, is in the best position in the district court to argue whether or not he got everything in the other case that he's asking for in this case. Now,
is there any difference between the two that you're aware of? That's a discrete question from whether the second case is moot or isn't moot. But is there anything that is in the first case that isn't in the second case that would influence the mootness issue or anything else?
Well, my answer to that is I'm not sure. I took a look at some of the pleadings that are before this Court in the other case. Again, I emphasize I'm not counsel in that case. One thing I was looking for that unless I missed, I didn't see, is a copy of the actual hearing and disposition in the prison or before the CDC that supposedly gave Mr. von Steich everything that he wants in terms of restoration of credits and indulgence of his hair length under the regulation. As I saw it, that document had been attached to a declaration that the Attorney General in that case had submitted in opposition to his motion for a preliminary injunction, and that was not in the excerpts of record in the other case. So I don't really know what it says. I know what the district court said, but I certainly was curious to look at that document and see if it went as far as the district court said it did.
So what you're saying
helps
is that
out here. I'm not sure.
That goes to whether, in fact, he's gotten complete relief in the other case, and it may be that he hasn't. But that still turns everything over to the second case. And it just seems very, you know, there just seems to be any purpose to recharacterizing the first case as a RLUIPA case. We've already got a RLUIPA case.
Well, he may already have a RLUIPA case, and he may already have gotten everything that he's asked for.
What I'm saying is it's separate from the question of whether he's gotten everything. If he hasn't gotten everything, he can get it in the second case. There's no reason the first case is better in that regard.
Well, it's two separate questions in terms of whether this case that I'm counsel on should be analyzed independently as a question of law, as a RLUIPA case, to convert the action and avoid the exhaustion bar. There's no dispute that the exhaustion doesn't apply to the RLUIPA case, that's properly exhausted. That's a separate question, and I think the answer, which, from what I get, is basically yes, that there is no offense to federalism or comity or any principle of law to say, yeah, this is what he really pleaded, and he properly exhausted that. The question, as I understand it,
it's really a different version of a mootness question. I mean, if what you're trying to do is convert case A into case B, and we already have case B, then why isn't that question moot in case A?
Well, my answer is that it might be moot. I'm not sure that for what's before this court in the two cases, the other case Mr. von Steich is pro se on, in this case that it's the court can satisfactorily answer that question, particularly without Mr. von Steich's input in both cases and whatever fact-finding might be necessary at the district court level. It may be that this case goes back to the district court. They set briefing. They file an amended answer or motion to dismiss on res judicata or mootness, however they want to characterize it. Mr. von Steich makes whatever showing he wants to make, and maybe they win. Maybe the case goes forward. But I just don't think that based on what we have right now, that the court is in a position to say that if the case goes back, it's totally moot and barred by res judicata.
Was the beard issue specifically raised in the habeas case?
Excuse me?
Was the beard issue as opposed to the hair issue specifically raised in the habeas case?
I think if you look at all the documents, beard length is probably mentioned at some points. I'm not sure if it's mentioned exactly in the petition. I know that that's an issue in the other case.
Well, the issue in the other case is whether the beard issue is in the case, so I'm wondering if it's in this case.
Well, what are we talking about in this case?
We're talking about, we were talking about hair length and denial of credits that impacted his parole eligibility.
Is there an ADA issue in the habeas case?
In my case, no. And there's, you know, obviously no claim for damages as there is in the 1983 case.
To get to the merits of your conversion point, do you have case law support for the notion? I mean, offhand, I don't know why habeas is special and why one couldn't look at the substance rather than the form of the petition. But there seems to be a tendency not to do that with habeas cases, and I'm wondering if you have any case law in which something like this has been done.
Well, the cases that I cite, none of them involve conversion to a RLUIPA action, and they do urge caution, especially going the other way when the court is considering converting to a habeas case out of concern that, well, that would be the inmate's only bite at the apple on habeas, and anything that he might want to do afterwards would run into the successive petition problem. In terms of whether it's all right to do it with an eye to the exhaustion argument, I think exhaustion is kind of a unique question of law because it's one that's imposed on the court sua sponte. The Attorney General doesn't even have to raise exhaustion before the court to serve the principles of comity and federalism, has to consider whether the petition is properly exhausted or not. So when the issue is before the court, I see no problem with saying that the district court should, and if the district court doesn't, the reviewing court should look at the pleadings and say, is this a case that, for purposes of comity and federalism, had to go through state court review and be properly exhausted in that way, or is there some other cause of action which is being alleged here, which there clearly is in the petition, that either is not subject to an exhaustion requirement or a different one, which under the PLRA it would just be exhausting administrative remedies, which Mr. von Steich clearly did.
But if there was a conversion to RLUIPA, there's been no Heck versus Humphrey problem raised in a RLUIPA case, and it seems to me to be waived. But if this case were converted to a RLUIPA case, why wouldn't we get into a Heck versus Humphrey problem?
Well, how Mr. von Steich's not challenging
Isn't he challenging the denial of good time credits?
Right.
Isn't that a Heck versus Humphrey issue ordinarily?
Well, Heck versus Humphrey involved, I believe, a 1983 action for damages based
on
unconstitutional.
Right, and so the question is, does it apply to RLUIPA or doesn't it apply to RLUIPA? There's some case law that it doesn't, and perhaps it doesn't, but that would be the issue, right?
I don't think there's a Heck versus Humphrey problem. It's an independent cause of action, and the case that we cite makes it clear that in a RLUIPA action, the Mayweather's case, that the court is entitled to remedy that by restoring credits, even though typically restoration of credits or denial of good time credits is an action that is at least before RLUIPA was enacted, was typically brought in habeas. But where you have a specific cause of action alleging violation of religious freedoms that resulted in a loss of credits, the court has a coextensive and perhaps even a greater obligation or power to remedy that. So it's not like we're asking to do something in another forum, jumping the gun that should have been done somewhere else. It's not like Heck versus Humphrey, where we're saying, give me damages for my unconstitutional conviction, where the conviction was never overturned in the first place.
Okay. Well, if you want to reserve some time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors. Robert Cross, Deputy Attorney General.
Is there anything in this case that's not in the other case in terms of which would affect, for example, the mootness issue in the other case, or whether the Beard issue is in the other case, et cetera, without arguing the other case.
Well, you're saying
in this
the other case, Mr. Von Steich, as I understand it, he's very litigious, has a number of cases. And
well, one that is on the calendar of today. That was pretty obvious, but I'm sorry.
That case was not assigned to me, and I have to confess that I'm not aware of the particulars.
Really?
Case. Yes, Your Honor.
That makes no sense at all.
I was unaware of the case until I saw a motion to
That is extraordinary.
Yes. Mr. Von Steich has a large number of cases.
But that's not the point. These are exactly the same thing. And they were consolidated for argument in this court.
I don't believe they were. Were they consolidated?
Well, they were set on the same day in the same place. Let's put it that way.
Yes, Your Honor. All I can say is it was assigned to a different deputy. I did call that deputy. And so all I know is from what I've spoken to that person. I don't have any firsthand knowledge of that case, but I'm certainly prepared to talk about the case that is before the court here, and that is the habeas case which Mr. Von Steich filed. And I would submit that the important things about that case are that everyone agrees it was filed as a habeas action. Everyone agrees that
I don't see any way to discuss it sensibly without the other case, because the point is that what he's asking for is to convert this case into a RLUIPA case, and there is a RLUIPA case on exactly what appears to be exactly the same thing. So there's no way to make a determination to me as to whether the proposition makes any sense without understanding whether the two cases cover the same ground.
Well, I would submit this, Your Honor, that as far as converting it, this was not done at the trial court. Had this been a motion in the district court that Mr. Von Steich had asked to convert this to an RLUIPA case, then certainly things would have happened differently. The first that I heard of this contention was in the brief. And that's one of my main points, is this was not brought in the court below. There was no application made to the district court to convert this to an RLUIPA case. This was brought as a habeas case. Everyone agrees that he did not exhaust in the state court and that the matter was properly dismissed as a habeas case. The whole concept.
So we could simply remand, because on a dismissal of any kind, including in a habeas, are supposed to be leave to amend. So we could simply remand changing it to a dismissal without prejudice and give leave to amend to add a RLUIPA claim, unless there's some reason why we can't do that.
The court could do that, but I would submit there are reasons why the court should not do that, and that is because this was not brought as an RLUIPA case. It was not even brought to the trial court's attention that this should be submitted as an RLUIPA case.
But that's not the point. And we have a more general principle that one doesn't grant dismissals with prejudice without giving leave to amend. So all we're doing is giving him leave to amend. Maybe he'll add a RLUIPA case, maybe he won't add it, or maybe he won't. But why don't we just do that?
That's true, Your Honor, but there is an RLUIPA case pending, as I submitted to the court.
That's why I asked the question of whether it's the same case, and you don't know.
I don't even know if that's the same case that was set on today's calendar, the case that I attached in my brief. I simply had the judge's opinion that, considering the RLUIPA case. And my point is that what is the point of converting my case into an RLUIPA case when he already had an RLUIPA case?
Because it depends whether they cover the same ground, and that's what I was trying to find out.
That I cannot represent to you, Your Honor. From my reading of the case, it appears to involve similar issues.
Yes, of course that's the same case.
It's the same district judge.
Yes.
It's the same district judge, and that may have been why the district judge did not convert it to an RLUIPA case, because she had pending an RLUIPA.
But I would think that the Attorney General's office could get his act together and get one person looking at this whole situation and let us know what makes sense. And that's what I expected to happen today, by the way. I mean, it's just extraordinary to me that we don't have that.
I believe, Your Honor, that the case was set for hearing this morning and a deputy was assigned, and I believe that case the deputy was told that that case was taken off calendar.
That's right. It was taken off calendar, but it was taken off calendar because we had a pro se petitioner and because I assumed I was we were at least going to find out how the two phases fit together by arguing this case, because that's the big question. How do they fit together?
Well, I apologize, Your Honor. The deputy that was assigned to that case was going to be here, and when was told that oral argument was being taken off, obviously he's not here.
All right. Well, there's no conceptual – at points in your brief, you argue, aside from this sort of waiver-based point, that there's some procedural reason or that you couldn't simply convert a habeas case into a RLUIPA case. Why not?
Well, it could be done, Your Honor. To say putting it back to amend would make sense. But as I read the brief, counsel is asking the court to convert it into an RLUIPA case, in essence, to redraft the pleading, to take a case that clearly is a habeas case and properly filed as a habeas case. It's certainly a very proper habeas corpus application, but for the fact that Mr. von Steitsch did not exhaust the state court remedies.
But there's nothing about a habeas case that makes it inherently, static, so to speak. I mean, ordinarily, parties can change their legal theories.
That's true, Your Honor.
And that's equally true, I would presume, in a habeas case.
I'm not saying that the court would not, if Mr. von Steitsch had applied for this, could not have given him that relief. If Mr. von Steitsch had said, I would like to amend and file this as an RLUIPA case, the court could have seen what Mr. von Steitsch had to say on that point and, depending on what Mr. von Steitsch said, could have granted that relief. That did not take place because it was not brought to the it was not asked of the trial court to do that. Instead, what Mr. von Steitsch chose to do is to appeal the dismissal of his habeas action.
Which was with prejudice, yes. Was it?
That I cannot answer, Your Honor. It was dismissed.
Okay. Thanks.
Normally, my understanding, and I would research it if the Court wishes, but my understanding is that a case that is dismissed for failure to exhaust is dismissed without prejudice.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
So what would that be if we thought this was otherwise merited? Could we just remand to give an opportunity to amend the complaint?
I believe that would be one available remedy. On the other hand, since Mr. von Steitsch's intent on the face of the habeas petition is to allege our RLUIPA action, this Court could also just simply order it remanded.
So obvious. I mean, you might have different parties for one thing. And I don't know how that would spin out with statute of limitations problems, but you might have different parties. You did in the other case have different parties. And you might have somewhat different allegations. So.
That's possible. Yes, Your Honor, that's possible. I wasn't clear if the Court has settled its questions. The other case that Mr. von Steitsch is representing himself on is the matter that was set for argument this morning. The order in this case, Mr. Cross made some remark about perhaps the Court didn't convert the action to our RLUIPA case because he'd already had one. The order in this case came first. The other case, I believe, was a 2006 decision.
How many cases in all does he have floating around? Now, you've mentioned one other. Is there more than that?
I don't know of any others on this particular issue. Counsel is not incorrect that he has filed various cases on various subjects, but I'm not sure that they're...
This is a revolutionary idea, but maybe the thing to do is send it back and order that he present all of his claims at one time and get them all ruled and come back on one appeal and in one big basket, and we'll just deal with it all.
Possibly.
I may not get another vote for that.
But basically, on the grooming issue, there are two cases, as far as we know.
There are, as far as I know, only two cases. The court asked if there was a Beard claim in Mr. in the current case that I'm on. I took a look at the petition. That's the only thing I just reviewed while I was sitting there. The petition refers to grooming standards, so I'm not
right. As does the other case, but when it gets specific, he's
talking about
hair for the most part.
In the other case.
Okay, counsel. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.